Somebody just asked me, Dave, where's all the guests? You'll have to ask my producer and his sidekick.
No, it's not the guests I mind. It's having to pretend I saw their movies.
My guests wound up in Hurricane Katrina, huh?
I guess.
Hey, at least the producer's not here. That is a gain. Have you noticed the difference in the show today?
Yeah.
Lively. We're levitating, huh?
Hallelujah.
Well, we throw a few overboard, you know.
Pirate ship.
Save the horses. Throw the rider overboard. Roth, 6 a.m., 866-313-3733. Want to take a phone call? Let me see what we got. Oh, looks like a gun story. Hey, turn the music down just a little bit there, Hutch. This is interesting. I never expected that this subject would connect so large. This is every single phone call now has lined up major. It's almost a political, I guess it is a political issue. I didn't think that this would be one subject that everybody would key into. Number 10, Louis, you have a gun story.
Yeah,
tell it.
I used to be a big fan until you did this kid.
Until what happened?
Suck.
I'm sorry?
Baba Booey said, you suck.
No.
Give it up.
Are you Baba Booey's brother? You know what? I find it interesting that you would take your time to pick up the phone and call an adult male Jewish guy with a bald spot instead of paying attention to whatever it is you're supposed to be doing.
He waited.
Is there a secret? Is there a secret agenda happening there?
Man, you got a gun, Dave.
20 minutes.
Maybe he's doing something entirely different with his gun. You want to put it back on the air there?
Oh, he's gone. He's long gone.
You dig it.
Yeah, I axed him.
Go ahead. Pick up another one, man. They're all good. They're all good.
Go.
Who's up?
How you doing? My question is, all right, if you want a gun, you can get a gun, right? So what's the point of making all these laws? Because the stricter laws you make, you're going to still get a gun no matter what. You can find one in the backseat of someone's trunk or backseat of anywhere. You know, what do you do?
I think that, again, you have to make some kind of stabilizing factor there. You can't just go ahead and legalize it. Then you will really have a major control issue because most people don't know what they're doing. Most people have no idea of how to actually handle that dangerous implement, okay? There's no education set in there. Most people simply prove that they can do a little bit of a quickie safety check. Hey, this is how I know that the pin is taken out, etc. But that all goes right out the back window.
Dave, the other problem is that there's not consistency in the United States in terms of how you can get a gun. And in other states, you can go down to Florida or some of the southern states, get a gun a little more freely than up here, and then you can just import them up here. So the real issue is a consistency across the United States in terms of how they're going to allow you to get a gun.
Well, great. Then let's build the system nationally. I'm not saying go freestyle and have anarchy, because then everybody who I'm up with at the shooting range with is just going to go buy more dangerous material and hand it out to their kids. No, I don't believe that there should be absolutely no law. I think there's got to be restraint. There's got to be education involved. And it's got to be there has to be some regimentation to it. Because otherwise, you know, all anything that comes along new technologically, guys are going to use it for war. Women are going to use it for loving. Remember when they invented nylon? They used it for straps to hold tanks down onto the top of ships. And look what women did with nylon.
Who, baby?
Take another call here. We'll go for one more. See?
All right. Let's
Who's there?
Hey, Dave.
Roth, we're on.
It's Mike.
Mike, how are you?
Good. How you doing? No, I was just calling him from Red Bank, New Jersey. You were talking about gun control. And I grew up and, you know, my dad and was always into guns. He was arrested when I was 4, my mom told me, for, you know, aggravated assault.
With a gun?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then put away for murder when I was 12.
Uh-oh.
And I have never come close to picking up any type of gun in my life until I heard your crappy show.
And so now you've been convinced or you've been disconvinced?
I've been convinced that I need to use one.
Do you want to shoot Dave or shoot yourself?
Hey, but I want to say one thing. Good luck. It's tough to replace the Stern.
There you go.
I have no intention of replacing Howard Stern. I think that Stern is absolute unique and that anybody who tries to imitate him is going to get about 80% of the way there. And it's going to be real evident, real clear that somebody is trying to crawl up that leg. I support Howard. And I think that in terms of the politics, in terms of advancing what's going on with free speech, somebody's got to push the edge, because the other side of the coin is going to be pushing back irregardless. Aside from that, you cretin stooge, feel free to call back anytime, and we can trade insults anytime you want, punk.
Yo.
Go ahead and switch them up to the next one. Roth here. Who's live?
Hello.
Who's on?
Gary.
Gary, how are you? Talk up.
All right.
What's
you
up? Go ahead, man. You're on.
I can barely hear you.
Yeah, that's because I'm sitting back in my chair. You're in the spotlight.
There you go. Oh, I'm on a show. Okay, great.
You're on the job?
Man,
you're on the job?
I wanted to ask you about how do you just, you know, I'm from the liberal left, and I'm all for, you know, having a gun. But obviously, I mean, it has to have some checks and balances, some sort of regulation. Like just like with, you know, driver's license. You can't let everybody drive a car, obviously, because they'll kill someone.
As I was just describing for the last 20 minutes, I'm 100% in agreement with you. What is your theory then?
My theory, as far as what, letting people, you know, you can't, just can't give everybody a gun. I mean, that's crazy.
So you're
really
so you're saying create a selection process or create an examination like they do for a pilot's license, for example, right? You're saying create some kind of testing scenario?
I mean, you should do some sort of background check. I mean, somebody with mental illness should not be able to get a hold of a handgun for obvious reasons. He's going to hurt himself. Or he's going to hurt anybody in any surrounding environment.
So you're saying that the sex offender that we allow to get out of prison early is okay to move him back into the community or around a grade school, but he shouldn't be able to buy a gun?
Exactly.
I twisted the logic around intentionally here. What I'm doing is I'm agreeing with you here, and I'm saying that, no, most people shouldn't be allowed to do most anything. Most, think about it. How many people pilot a 3,000-pound automobile going 18 inches apart in opposite directions on the highway? I'm amazed that there isn't more trauma out there on the highways. And the guns are the exact same thing because it's the same people. Did we lose him? He's still talking. Go ahead. Wait a minute. The pilot was asleep. Say the last sentence again. There.
Yeah,
go.
I'm saying a lot of those guys usually have a couple of DUIs under their belt. You know, they got a record. You can't let these people drive. I mean, obviously, the same thing with guns. There's got to be checks and balances, just like the President of the United States. You can't just let him just, you know, let him spy on everybody. There has to be some checks and balances. You know, you can't give all these people this power.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead,
Back in 2001, everyone was in an uproar after the 911 commission reports came out, and when they said the government had all this opportunity to do background checks and do things on these people who were just learning how to fly planes, just to fly them and not land them, and everyone was screaming that our national security was pitiful. And now all of a sudden, because the president is doing something about it, and he brought it to the Senate committee, and he is doing something about it, all of a sudden everyone's up in arms about, you know, personal freedoms. So tomorrow, God forbid, another plane's going to crash somewhere else, and everyone will be screaming that the president didn't do anything.
I mean,
sorry, what don't you think?
They gave out over, since they came up with that law, was it 1974 or whatever? They gave out, about 19,000 warrants, and they only rejected about 3 of them, and I only think the 3 were only in the last year. I don't think, you know, he's keeping a secret from the secret courts. I mean, what's that all about? Who's he really spying on?
Do you believe we're in a state of war with terrorists? Do you believe that? Because I do. And in a state of war, the president has...
I love the French. They're great people. I've been to France.
I'm not talking about that. I said the terrorists. Do you believe we're in a state of war right now? With the terrorist?
Yeah, obviously.
Okay, so if you read your laws, in a state of war, the president has powers in order to protect the country. And one of these powers, unfortunately, may impede some personal freedoms. But he's not just arbitrarily running across the United States listening to...
What does that mean? I mean, the Patriot Act, what does that mean? You can disappear in the middle of the night without anybody knowing about it?
Well, let me ask you a question. He's spying or he's listening to... If your neighbor's calling Afghanistan... And routinely calling Afghanistan, and he's in the country illegally, or he's in the country doing something he shouldn't be doing. The president shouldn't check on that. And tomorrow, if that guy is the guy that flies the next plane, 300 more of my brothers are going to die in EMS in the fire department. I don't think so.
Were you working at Ground Zero, Lynn?
I had just left the city EMS system. I was the EMS inspector for the New York State Bureau of EMS, and I had just left, and I was actually on a cruise when it happened. But after that, I was working with Disaster Medical Assistance Team 4, and we were down there and working with a couple of the hospitals doing preparedness. And I lost 13 personal friends and 300 brothers and sisters, both in the fire department, police department, and EMS. And you know what? You could take away my freedom if that means that those lives could have been saved. I would do anything to bring them back, including take the chance that maybe some of my personal freedoms might be impeded, but that's about it.
Very articulately put. I want to hear some contrasting views. Give us a call, 866-313-3733. David League. Well, a little town hall meeting here. Who would have thought we'd take a left-hand turn into Brainville, huh? Woo, this is going to be a good job.
Sorry, David.
No,
just,
man, this
hurts,
is
man,
great.
You know?
You're smart right on. Linda Reisman, who would have thought? You need a job? Give it up, Sasha. You've been replaced.
Oh, no.
Roth, 866-313-3733. You want to take another call? The forest is on fire. Let me take a look at the mark here.
Oh, we got Darnell.
Darnell.
Yeah, David.
Yo, what's up, Darnell?
Okay, big fan, man.
Talk to me. What's on your mind, Darnell?
Myself. Anyway, I'm a correctional officer of Philadelphia.
Okay, this is going to be good. Swing, okay. You got the mic.
Now, see, like a couple hours ago, I've been trying to call you since 6:30, but a couple hours ago you were saying about how people that have those positions and carry a weapon and they should be paid extra. But being a correctional officer, we weren't allowed to carry weapons in the jail. Police officers had to check their weapons at the door, and they were afraid to walk through prisons.
I'm quite familiar with that. Like I said, my father was a prison doctor, did most of his business, worked 4 and 5 days a week in the California prison system. And the stories that happened around Thanksgiving dinner were very unique. Okay, I was
There's like from the holidays, they're all suicide watches. All the time.
And we get this on the holidays working in the ambulance as well. Okay, I was broadly generalizing there and saying if you have to wear a firearm to work. If you have to wear anything that protects you and stabilizes your family.
These guys got it worse, Dave.
We didn't have anything.
They got
worse. All we had was heart and courage.
And you got heart and courage and that's it now? Do you carry any kind of implement when you're in-house?
All we did was carry a whistle. If we got in trouble, you blow the whistle and the other guards will come and help you.
Yeah, isn't that kind of like calling 911 when a 6-year-old is carrying a loaded Derringer and you don't want to take the gun away because you don't know how and you hope the cops get there in at least 20 minutes?
Okay, well, this is the other thing.
Okay, so what are you leading up to? Are you saying that there needs to be some...
This is what I'm saying, like, we should... Like, use your body. Right, as far as martial arts go, use your body before you can pick up a weapon.
Well, that certainly makes sense. But for somebody in your position or somebody who's accountable for other folks?
I was 14 years old.
I'm sorry?
I practiced martial arts since I was 14 years old.
I've practiced martial arts since I was 11. And I got to tell you, I've seen so many people get killed, get smashed, get beat up, fourth-degree black belts, because you know as well as anybody, my friend, that all it takes is one little error. How many UFC ultimate fighting contests do we see between highly trained, unbelievably skilled fist fighters, guys who can use their heads, knees, and elbows with, like most people, can spell their own language. And then one little thing happens, and somebody goes to the hospital. All it takes is one little mistake, one little deception, and those martial arts aren't going to stack up for you, do you think?
Well, see, the thing is, the one thing about the martial arts is that you would learn how to walk away before you even get into it.
Excellent.
Just let it go.
Excellent. I want to tell a little story here. To summarize, and this is what we teach kids in one of the first classes when they start showing up in kendo class. It's a little bit of what we call fire discipline in the military. And this is the truest form of strength because anybody can throw a punch. Anybody can learn to throw a pretty good front kick, too. What's the hardest thing to learn? Two samurai faced each other in front of the Shinjyogi Gate in Osaka back in the 1500s. It's a very famous story. And they faced off for almost 20 minutes without moving. When you're fighting to the death with sharpened pieces of steel, even a slight little shaving cut, that's it, you're done. And they faced for 20 minutes. And finally, after all that silence, one dashed forward and spit in the other one's face. And the second one said, "That's it. You just pissed me off. You win." That's the ultimate strength. If you can withhold, if you can hang in tight, if you have that self-control. My producer yesterday just lost it entirely. Started calling people names. Started yelling, calling the manager names and stuff. Stuff that if he said to a girl, he'd never work in this town again. Total lack of self-control. He's dying to show somebody that he's got a left hook, or he knows a little judo, or he thinks his aerobic capacity is up because he jogs and he's going to outlast or whatever. Totally lost his self-control. I totally lost all my respect for him there.
Mighty Matt?
Oh, no, somebody called him, called him the names and whatever, got in his face, put his nose up close. This is obviously somebody who's never spent any time in an emergency room and doesn't realize just how quick it can all go wrong in a big hurry. You don't ever want to throw a punch at somebody. You don't ever want to start calling people's names. You put your head close enough for a headbutt, you deserve what you get.
Oh, yeah.
You draw down on somebody, what I have been told, what my father said is, if they produce it, they better use it. You don't want to get involved in somebody else's games. You don't want to be real quick with that kind of an anger, particularly with a weapon. Never. That's the truest test of strength. Truest test of strength is who can knock somebody out with one punch. That happens in comic books, baby. What usually happens is the basic tenet of all combat is deception. Fooled you, now you're in the hospital. Pick up another call here. Freedom, I don't care. Picking, they're all good. Wow.
Look, governor should go after mosques.
Say that again?
I said one of the callers. One of the look at that one.
Try that one.
That's interesting.
All right, the governor should go after mosques.
That's what he says.
Absolutely.
Okay, let me preface this. Hold his call 1 second there. Drop his volume there 1 second. Let me preface this because I saw something interesting. I think it was in the newspaper or on television set. There were some Muslims. I believe it's at Yankee Stadium or one of the baseball stadiums, either here in town or Boston somewhere, where there's a mosque area where they can pray because you have to, you pray four times a day, whatever. And they created a space for this. And a number of the other fans saw guys who were obviously Mideastern or of that appearance, the classic profile, and went and got the cops. And the cops didn't know about it. There was a big brouhaha because the Islamics had claimed that there's a chapel, available, or there's rooms for spiritual rooms, but there was nothing for the Islamics, for the Mohammedan faith. Do we even call it that?
It was like a terrorist training ground or something in Yankee Stadium?
No, they thought they were collecting or something. Oh. And this is a place where they were hanging a smoking room where they would convene with each other and perhaps discuss political. They didn't realize that it was a purely religious pursuit, and I think this individual wants to discuss that. Go ahead and bring him up. Are you still there, my friend?
Yeah, I'm here. You there?
Okay, go ahead. Why should the government? What should the government do with mosques?
What you were just referring to was Giant Stadium, and it wasn't a designated area where they could pray. They just took it upon themselves to go into this restricted area and pray.
Oh.
And then there was a big a big thing about it. So now Giant Stadium segregated a place for them to pray, but initially they weren't allowed there. That's why the cops were called.
Okay, this is interesting. And what's your theory then? Go ahead and lead
into
it.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with Debbie Schlussel. She used to be, she used to call Stern a few times.
Hold
she'd
on.
Always report on Islamic things going to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, she's actually she's a researcher, and she researches what's going on in the terrorist community, and she's got a website, and she's got some good background materials. She's sort of like a little covert spy on this stuff and brings things to the attention of the government that they may not know.
Okay, now, Linda, you just came back from a seminar down in Florida on terrorism?
Yeah, a few of them, yeah.
Okay, can you explain to us what you visited there?
Essentially, a lot of the training that we take is just really to learn how these groups operate in the United States and how they could be your very neighbors and not even know it.
Okay, so you have a little bit of an interview on this, okay?
Yeah, and a lot of
my friend, you're back on the horn there. Go ahead and tell us your theory. Get it.
But, I don't know, she went into one of these mosques undercover with, the whole burqa on, and she was saying about, how when they were capturing that Apache pilot, they used to repair the Apache helicopters, and, what they did to that guy on video, they cut off his head. They had, a puppet show mimicking that, for the kids to watch. These people are cretins. They are the cancer of this world.
Which people are you referring to?
Muslims.
Now hold on 1 second. I believe that the world is populated by cretins, evil dummies, stooges, layabouts, and screw-ups, but they're not all just one group. I'd love it if they were. It'd be really easy for me to move away from them. But I think that just, this involves all kinds of neighborhoods, all kinds of religions, all kinds of anything. Every time somebody starts a sentence with the word all, I blanch a little bit from that. Now, go ahead and take the ball. I want to hear what you say to that.
Yeah, but
name another religion that says to kill another person and you're glorifying God.
These are extremists.
If you kill Christians, you get 52 versions. I want 52 virgins. I want to know who came up with the 52 number.
Okay, well, hold on one second. Are you, and you know, this terrorism and whatnot finds itself in different variations, different faces, okay? Are you aware that Dr. Ruth Westheimer was a sniper for the Haganah when Israel was trying to kick the British out of, you know, Canaan and Israel in 1946, 1947? I understand she was a good, clean shot with a German Mauser and a British Enfield. Now, what do you think about that?
I think she should be held on war crimes, then, you know?
Oh, well, then you're going to have to try everybody from the prime minister to every inhabitant in that country.
Not every Muslim is an extremist.
Majority of them.
I think you're generalizing, and I think that essentially, yeah, I'm sure there are mosques where they may preach hatred against America, but there are certain, I mean, there are groups that hate me. I'm gay, and I can go into a couple of these churches, and you would think that I am the devil of the earth. So,
I'd like to think you're the devil of the earth too, hot stuff.
I'm telling you though, but you can't generalize. Does that mean all Christianity is bad? No, some people, you know, think I'm heterosexually challenged. The other people say live my life. But that doesn't mean that every single group, just because there's a few bad apples, and in terms of religion, doesn't mean that every single group is bad.
On the other hand, most black people have rhythm.
You think?
Most Jewish people are really good with money, right?
Yeah, and you know what? There's a lot of organizations.
Most Catholics love the Red Sox, right?
Yeah, right. Not this one.
Most Italians only eat pasta, right? Most Mexicans will steal stuff from you, right?
I don't think so, Dave.
No, I'm trying to peddle all of the rumor, all of the gossip, and all the routine nonsense here, right?
Oh.
And it always rains in England.
You think?
That's the first true thing I've heard all morning. No, I don't believe that all anybody is any one thing. I think pretty much everybody's bent. But hey, all in one and all, I'm bent just like you. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Don't go away and you'll be able to talk to me.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.
I haven't had a regularly scheduled life since, what, 1973? Last thing I want is regularly scheduled. This is going to be my first office job. What do you think, Lynn? Am I going to survive at this?
Yeah, if you stay up all night, it'll be like old times and may not impact you that bad.
Well, I maintain I have a more Buddhist vision of it, that 4 in the morning, which is when you have to wake up to do this gig, is not at all an unfamiliar space. Whether you stayed up or just woke up, you have to be at ease at 4 in the morning, and most people aren't. It's like being in the middle of the ocean. Are you comfortable in deep water when you can't see land anywhere around you? Because 4 in the morning is a very existential time. You're going to be by yourself. It's still dark outside. There's nothing but a couple dogs barking off in the distance and, you know, and the garbage guys down below going, oh yeah, get up.
Yeah, well, where you live, Dave, my God, till 3 in the morning, it's popping there.
No, darling, until 4 in the morning.
Yeah, it never stops.
I didn't realize that every single product at every single little bodega, which is a little market, you know, down where I live on the Lower East Side, has its own truck. Hey, there goes the Snapple truck. There goes the Red Bull truck, but that's different than the Red Bull sugar-free truck.
Is it really?
Oh, totally. Which is different than the Budweiser truck, which is different than the Old English 800 truck, which is the one I'm waiting for.
I don't even know. What is Red Bull? Like, what is that stuff?
Liquid speed. We are one nation wired together. You know what? You know what the smell of dating is for high school kids today? It's the smell of coffee. Starbucks,
oh, yeah.
Pete's Coffee, whatever. I never drank coffee until, I was over 30 years old. To me, that was what old people drank. You know, it was something that, well, so was whiskey, but
drug.
I made a concession. Oh, it's definitely a new drug. Are you kidding? Get your heart rate up there. Boom. Get so much more done. Boom.
Free speed.
Oh, it's completely legal speed. And you know, it falls in league with tea. Tea is even worse. Why do you think China gets so much done in so short a time, baby? Because of that black tea, that ground tea, man. And that's the smell of dating now, is the smell of coffee. When I was growing up, we were just teenagers and we were dating. It was the smell of Marlboro cigarettes and Coors beer and Vitalis hair oil.
Ugh.
No, really, you know, there was or Brill cream. That was the smell of, you know, when you got fixed up to go out. But now what I see, and that and McDonald's. down on Delancey, where it's very Puerto Rican, and I say that with absolute respect, con respect, absolutamente. That's where the kids hang out. All of the Hispanic kids go to McDonald's, and I go down there. You know, I'll go and have a meal, have my meal, whatever, and I'll watch these kids. They'll hang out. They'll be still inside socializing when I go walking past the window an hour later. That's their hang. Yeah. The smell of dating there is McDonald's, huh? The smell of French fries.
Dave, you should know this. What's the worst withdrawal? You've been on the ambulance and in the precincts. How about when that coffee pot breaks or you can't get a good cup of coffee? Talk about withdrawal.
It's not withdrawal. It's World War IX.
Yeah.
People completely lose their composure. All fire discipline is suspended. And in helicopter, we call it falling out of the sky.
Yeah. That coffee pot broke. It was the end.
Oh, completely. And you know who's the most popular? Is the one who brews a good pot, right? The one who goes, the one who makes the strongest coffee.
Yep.
I've been to places where the rhythm section refused to leave the garage, the rehearsal space back down in Miami when I did the Vegas band, because I found out that the conga player, great guy, conga player, was not only just making the coffee, but it was Bustillo, you know, the Cuban coffee, but he was taking the finished product and pouring it back through the machine.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. The trouble with Cuban coffee is a week later, I'm drowsy again, man.
Hey, Dave.
Yo.
I think there's like a correlation. We're talking about China and Japan. They drink all this coffee and tea. They drink about 8 to 10 cups a day. And that's why they think they have this antioxidant effect and they live longer. But it might have something to do with the productivity in terms of why, you know, a lot of their products are cheaper and their workers are better. I wonder if it's caffeine related.
Absolutely it is. The industrial era in the United States could not have existed without the introduction of caffeinated drinks, without coffee,
yeah,
and without tea becoming part of all the sweatshops that happen, particularly here in these kinds of cities. We're broadcasting to some of the biggest cities in the United States, New York, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. These places were built by people who only could have done that. You know, when you see the Victorian era, the 1800s, you know, I forget the name of the book, The Something Jungle or whatever. It's that's what kept everybody working all of those hours. It's not humanly possible to extend yourself to working 16, 18-hour days. How do you think the Brooklyn Bridge was built? How do you think that these buildings are built today? Now it's become a standardized issue.
Fad.
No, it's not a fad because it's addictive. It's going to replace cigarettes because it's much more clandestine. Doesn't leave a smell. And it's a smell that's not, it's an aroma. So it's kind of pleasing. I love the smell of coffee when it's brewing, you follow? And after a while, it becomes a ritual, just like rolling a joint. Most people who've been smoking pot for a long time will tell you, if you ask Snoop Doggy, he'll tell you. No. Rolling the pot, fixing it, manicuring it,
cleaning it,
putting
the ritual.
How do you know?
Hey. I watch you, Dave.
No, it's the ritual. It becomes the ritual. And making coffee is the same thing. You've got to, you get the right bean, then you grind the bean. It depends on how much of an addict you are.
That's right.
Everything about me is addictive nature. I'm a completely addictive nature. Anything worth doing is worth overdoing by Thursday. That's my credo. But the whole thing of it, now I have a special grinder, I got a special bean, I got the Arabica bean, and I'm going to grind it, but I'm going to grind it the way I used to mix orange juice in the morning, where I would put just a little less water than it said on the directions, and the orange juice was a little thicker. Oh, yeah. Well, you can do that with coffee. The trouble with Cuban coffee is a week later, I'm drowsy again. Why do you think Cubans speak so fast?
Hey, Dave, when I first met Hutch, he rolled his own cigarettes. And I don't know the truth, Hutch, I thought you were rolling, you know, marijuana.
Well, that's why I'm so good at rolling cigarettes.
Why do you roll your own cigarettes?
Wait, listen, Dave, you don't know what happened.
Better for
I got so
you.
Scared. I'm thinking you're standing outside, and he's rolling this thing. I'm having a panic attack.
Because I'm standing next to him?
Right, on 1515, we were down there.
And you think I'm going to get busted, like in Washington Square Park?
I'm like trying to block you, because I see a cop. And he hands you one of these rolled cigarettes.
Well, stop. You're saying like May 10th, 1993?
This is like last month. So I'm thinking he's handing you something else, and I'm like, what is he doing? I had no idea that English people roll their own cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
Then you light it up, and I'm thinking, how cool is this? This guy has pot and it doesn't even smell. This is like, David Lee Roth is the coolest guy because even his pot doesn't smell.
Yep.
And then I realized, that you were smoking.
Why do you smoke hand-rolled cigarettes? Is it a money thing or a taste thing?
It's pure. It is taste, yes. It's pure tobacco. It doesn't contain the chemicals that... you know, make your tobacco burn away when you leave
you're
a cigarette.
You're smoking and you're worried about chemicals.
How did I know you were going to bring that up? Okay? Put it this way. When I put my cigarette in the ashtray, all right, I know 5 minutes later...
Your haircut's on fire and you're worried about your mustache.
No. The cigarette is still going to be there and I can relight it and put it... If I put a Marlboro in an ashtray, it'll burn away. If I drop it on the mattress, if I happen to fall asleep, it'll burn the mattress. My cigarette, in all likelihood, will go out.
And no one grubs.
But it does taste better.
I have a very funny story about cigarettes. Do we got to do commercial break? Is that coming up?
Yeah, I think we should go to a break and then do your cigarette.
I have a very funny story about the highland jungles of New Guinea and the cigarettes we were smoking there. Allegedly.
David Lee Roth in the mornings.
A partnership for a drug-free... we'll make the loop here. Let's get some station ID here.
Oh, this is okay.
Oh, it's beautiful, Mike. It really is.
Bienvenue au David Lee Roth. Faites comme chez vous, nous on le fait. Roth, 6h du mat.
That's how I want you to talk to me, Sasha. Come over here, baby. Come over here. I want you to say, Dave, I'm so delighted to be your intern.
Dave, I'm so delighted to be your intern.
More about that after this.
Did you get all the hot chicks?
My IQ just went down 14 points. How old are you, darling?
How old are you?
21.
My IQ just went down another 6 points. All right, let's get serious. That was serious. Seriouser. I promise, talking about we were talking about the ritual of smoking being as important as the actual act of smoking. You know, for me, I don't get much buzz from smoking, but the ritual of buying the pack of cigarettes, tearing it open. Oh, you got to do the thing where you tap it twice on your fingers. I don't know. I have no idea what that does.
It loosens the cigarettes in the packet so they
don't... Oh, come on, Hutch.
I thought it compacts.
Turn the music up when you talk.
Oh, no.
Impacts it.
Insult.
Impacts it. He's impacted. Is that what you're trying to say? Animal, do you smoke?
No, I don't smoke. I had bad experience with smoking, so I just gave it... Well, I actually bought 2 packs of cigarettes in my life. Some fool told me I could pick up girls in a club if I buy some cigarettes and, you know... Good conversation. It worked every once in a while, but it makes your breath stink so bad. Then I messed around and accidentally inhaled it. Then my lungs almost like wanted to jump out of my chest, and I knew smoking just wasn't for me, man.
What about smoking pot?
Oh, yeah, I smoke pot.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Wait. Well, the best stuff is the stuff that killed Elvis, and doesn't
that
have the same impact on you physically?
Man. Yes, sir.
You know,
like as you know, I'm a artist. I draw crazy stuff like Star Wars and
you're an excellent artist. You're an excellent comic artist. Okay,
and like when I'm smoking, I'm there, man. I can just like draw amazing cartoons. I create amazing warriors, all kind of crazy stuff. And
okay, now 1 second. What response do you get if you drink coffee? Is it a different kind? Is it a different picture on the paper?
Well. I don't really know how to answer that, boss, because I do not drink coffee.
What about tea? Anything with caffeine?
I drink sodas. I drink Diet Coke. And
let me ask you a question.
I really have no difference in it.
When you were a kid, okay, a little kid, where'd you grow up? Montgomery?
Alabama. No, I grew up in Andalusia, Alabama, but, you know, that's my grandmother had a farm. I'm like a farm boy.
Okay, and you lived on a real farm? What kind of animals was on the farm?
You name it, we had it.
Okay. And did everybody drink coffee? Did they drink tea then at that point in time?
No, they drunk some, They went out in the woods and got some stuff called sassafras tea. It's like a bush that grows in the woods.
Does it have caffeine in it?
Yes, Lord, it would mess you up.
Yeah, but you would get things done, right? Because working on a farm is serious hard work labor, right?
But I didn't tell you the main ingredients of it, though.
Well, I'm about to hear, I think.
It's moonshine, baby.
Moonshine. Yes, did you make moonshine? You know how to make moonshine?
I used to run moonshine for my grandmother when I was young.
No, wait, slow down. This is good. Your grandmother made moonshine, right?
Well, my grandmother used to make the best moonshine you ever want to put your lips on. You drank some, you just numb your lips, man. That's just how good it was.
Now, you from where you're from is just below Montgomery.
Right.
Is that true?
About 90 miles.
90 miles.
Yes.
Okay. And what did she make her moonshine from? Because you can make that from any number of things.
Well, her main ingredients was crab apples. That was
really
her main ingredient.
And she would let them ferment? Or how do you make it? Go ahead and describe this to us.
Oh, man, you're trying to get me busted.
I'm not getting you busted. Are you
okay,
kidding? This is New York City. This is culture, baby.
Okay,
go ahead.
Well, let me see. Can I remember how she made it? I know it was a lot of sugar, a lot of corn, and let's see. And
she would put it in what kind of a jar? What do you box it up in? Mason jars.
She mixed it up in mason jars or milk jugs.
You mean the paper with the wax?
The plastic ones.
Yeah. Really? And this is clear liquid, right?
Clear liquid. I'm talking about you can even crank your car up with it. And so we used to run moonshine. You know, we used to run moonshine for her and stuff.
What do you mean by running moonshine, animal?
All the little clubs around bought moonshine for my grandmother, and we used to run it to them at night. Cops get behind us. We had like a 57 Chevrolet, the whole bottom's in the back.
A 57 Chevy Bel Air Coupe?
No, it was a Volt. No, it was
doesn't matter.
So you put it. It's been so long ago. I can't remember exactly what model it was.
How old were you when you were doing this?
I started running moonshine for it when I was like 13.
And you were driving at the time?
Yeah, I was driving at 10. Because you were from a farm, you know, I learned to drive on a tractor at 8 years old.
Okay, I'm visualizing everything you says. Yeah. Okay, and how much do they pay for a mason jar of your mama's moonshine?
Oh man, we even had some stuff called a po' boy. That was a quarter shot of moonshine, and some people come by and want that on credit at 3 a.m. You know what I'm saying?
One shot.
Yes, one shot, and it's like 25 cents. We call it a po' boy.
And how many? And they drink one po' boy.
One po' boy, and you can like. Man, you can just like float on out. That's how strong that stuff was, man. You can like drop it on the floor and it would like spark, man.
Really? And how old was your grandmother when she made this?
She started when she was about like, I don't know, 40, but she died at 84 and she'd never been to a doctor in her life. Never.
Maybe that's why she died.
Well, you know, you're 84 and not going to a doctor, man. You can like knock on wood, man. But, you know, like, one day, like, she was, like, walking around with her lips all out. And I'm like, what's wrong, Grandma? She said, I got a lot of lookout, and these fools won't pay me. I was like, really? I was like, well, Grandma, I'll go get your money. Give me the list. Who owe you? Like that.
Well, hold on now. People, you got to understand, how tall are you, animal?
I'm 6'5".
And how much?
About 350.
Jesus, you're losing weight.
Yeah, I done lost a lot of weight.
You're wasting away. No,
yeah,
you're bigger than any three people combined here. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Okay, so when Animal decided, when Animal's going to go collect, you now have the visual firmly in mind. Proceed.
See, like the first person I really worked for in collection was my grandmother and stuff. So, you know, like she gave me the list of who all older, and I was like, I'll get this money for your grandma. So I went up to the little juke joint, these guys up there.
The juke joint, did you say?
Yeah.
What's a juke joint?
John has got like one pool table, one jar of pickle legs, one jar of pickle feet, and a pool table. And that's about it. That's the jig joint.
And what kind of music they play in there?
Well, basically, it was playing like James Brown, Earth, Wind, you know, all the Isley Brothers, all the old stuff. Probably stuff you haven't heard, like Sun. I don't know if you ever heard of Sun.
Don't know him.
Yeah. And they had groups like Poot Nanny, stuff like that.
Okay.
You know? And so I go up there and stuff. They shooting pool, and I'm trying to talk to the guy. He wouldn't say nothing to me. So I took his pool stick from him, and I actually broke his arm. My first gig, nah. I broke his arm, you know. Just for my grandmother, you do anything for her. And so I got the money. They was betting on a pool game. I took that money, and I said, anybody else owe my grandmother, you better get down there and pay her, or I'm coming to see you. Then the cops came to my house. you know. I'm so scared, man. I'm like, I ran out in the woods. They was looking for me. And then, like, my uncle actually tucked me down to the precinct and stuff because they couldn't catch me. I'm big, but I could run real good, you know. So, you know, like, and then, like, because, like, my grandmother didn't want my mother to find out that I was working for her. She said, don't tell your mother. And to this day, I never told my mother I used to be a gangster for her mother, you know. She the one who actually got me started in this tough man stuff, you know.
This is a Morgan Freeman movie.
Yeah. So she actually got me into the tough man stuff. And, she was, and actually, I didn't have to go to jail. I can't even remember exactly what happened because I was like 13, you know. And so, you know, I get back and stuff, man. Now I'm real hard. Now I done been down to the jailhouse. All the kids was asking me how I look and all that stuff. Which I never did go in the back. We was in the front like this, and I'm just shaking, scared, just knowing I wasn't going to never see the outside again. And that kind of like scared me a little bit. About doing bad things. And
it's
stuff,
what
you know?
Scares me about doing this radio gig. There's no window that opens.
Yeah, but I still did bad things. I just didn't ever get caught, you know, because I was real fast. I could run, you know, that's my thing.
And leaping ahead a few years, the Lord has placed you on the Roth team.
Oh, yes, on the Roth team.
And do you feel that you're having the experience of atoning for a difficult past?
Oh, man, you can't, like a head rush every day when I'm with you, Dave. You know that, how we do it.
Yeah, but the rhythm section says the same thing, and that's for a whole different reason. It's because they don't understand the punchlines.
Yeah, okay.
You understand my punchlines.
Oh, every last one of them, man. I bite off you sometime, man, you know.
So let me ask you, do you think that moonshine contributed to who you are today?
I really think so, and it built my character and stuff, you know.
And give me a song. I'm not believing Get out of here.
That's the end of the show, Dave.
Is he with us?
Yeah. Whatever it is, I can't get.
Mornings.